Communication can be defined as the act of conveying meaning from one person or entity to another. On the surface, it seems like a pretty simple exercise. I speak, and the essence of what I mean is transferred to you, the hearer. But if we step back and take an honest listen to the conversations happening all around us, we'll realize that communication is actually a bit more complicated and oftentimes much more difficult than we might expect. Communication is at the root of every aspect of our lives. The health of our relationships is determined by it. Success in our jobs is often significantly impacted by how well we can communicate. And as Christians, it's at the foundation of what it means to be a disciple of Christ. We are called to proclaim or communicate the good news about Jesus. To be a successful communicator, one must do more than simply be effective at putting words together. It's perhaps of even greater importance that the meaning is conveyed in such a way that the audience will actually hear what it is that we're trying to communicate. I'm your guest host, Wes Vi, and today on Disruptive Adventism, we'll hear from Jonathan Russell, who currently serves in the Oregon Conference as the Assistant to the President for Multimedia Communications. As we'll hear from his story, success in ministry is less about programs and more about building effective channels of communication. As we get started, Jonathan will share a little bit about his early experience in ministry.
So I was just out of cemetery. Yeah. So I was coming out. I was probably 25, 26, something like that. We had a one-year-old daughter. My wife and I, we moved back home to Portland. We both grew up in the Portland area. And it's actually kind of funny because there was when the conference president first called me about this potential call, he goes, "We're thinking about sending you to Sunnyside." I said, "Don't bother." He goes, "Why?" I said, "Well, that's, I know about Sunnyside. My wife grew up in Sunnyside. Like, that's not a church I could ever imagine participating in. It's just too traditional. It's too straight-laced. It's too much organ music and traditionalism. I just could never do that." And so that was the end of the conversation. Like, okay. And it was probably 4 months later, we had leadership transition. They kind of lost track of where I was going to go after seminary, called me back again. They said, "We really think you want to go to, we want you to go to Sunnyside." And I was like, "Why? I told you I don't want to go there." And they said, "Well, they're interested in young adult ministry. They're interested in growing young adult ministry there, and we think you could do that." And so I was like, "Well, we'll pray about it, we'll talk about it." And very quickly, the Lord led us to be there and to be involved with the Walla Walla University's nursing campus and to be able to grow that ministry. And it was fantastic to be able to serve and to be able to grow young adult ministry, to grow the opportunity for cross-generational connection in the church. So I got to spend 8.5 years there in 3 or 4 different roles.
Many churches are in a similar situation to the one we heard about in our story. They've begun to recognize that the younger generations are disappearing, and they feel the need to do something about it. But many of them struggle with how to make the change from a place where young people don't want to be to a place where young people do want to be. And it can be difficult to come to terms with what it's going to take to make that change. They say that they want to change, but in the words of Inigo Montoya, "You keep using that word, I do not think it means what you think it means."
So what was interesting is, so I came at a time where the church already had recognized we're going to die if we don't do something. So on their lips was, "We need young people." The application of "we need young people" was, "I'm going to design a program, and then I'm going to ask a young person to participate in it. You know, I am going to design." So at that church, people love the organ music and the classical music that comes through. They love a certain traditional rhythm of the worship service. And so including young people would be, "I'm going to design this traditional worship service, and I'm going to to call the only 19-year-old I know and see if they would read the scripture reading. And so part of the cultural change was to say, let's create a seat at the table. You know, it was, I don't know, I was never a really confrontational person, but it would be just asking questions about conversation. So often we use insider language that doesn't make any sense. And so it would be about just calling out that insider language to say, is that really what you mean? Or say what you mean. You know, we had a conversation at one point, I'll never forget this, where the music committee was meeting about what's proper to have music, what kind of music to have proper in the church. It's a church that loves their organ music, and one person sitting at the table said, well, we need to make sure we only have biblical music in the church. It was coded language, because I stopped him right there. I said, hold on a second. You wouldn't even accept biblical music in this church. And everybody looked at me stunned. I was like, where do you find the organ in the Bible? It's not there. You know, if you were going to have biblical music, we're actually talking about instruments that are more like guitars, more like woodwinds, maybe, like percussion instruments. And then, oh, okay, so maybe it's not biblical music. Well, what kind of music is it then? Well, it's the music we like. Oh, so we're wanting our young people to come and to be a part of the worship service that you like. Well, yeah, because I like it. I don't love that we're talking about music at this point, because we found that music really wasn't the issue, belonging was. I mean, and that's the point, is are we going to design something in our image and then try to plug in our token young people? Or are we going to open up a seat at the table and say, let's talk together. You know, I care about your journey. I care about who you are. I care that you're not only the future of our church, but the present of our church, and I want to be friends with you.
Dallas Willard wrote in his book, The Divine Conspiracy, your system is perfectly designed to yield the result you are getting. In other words, if you want things to change, things are actually going to have to change.
So there was nothing exciting about what we did. We created a space where we could talk about Jesus honestly on Sabbath morning in Sabbath school. And so we took our Bibles and we talked. But probably the thing that did as much as anything was creating space on Friday evenings for people to be together. You know, they're looking for that gap. And for us, it worked in that Friday evening gap. There was this Friday evening opportunity where people were kind of winding down after a long week. And to be able to create a space where people could know each other, worship together, hang out, and just be community, that made a huge difference. And so it didn't take long before those two people were like, you know what, this interaction matters, and I'm going to bring somebody else along. And it literally just grew organically. What's interesting about that first year, or maybe a first 2 years, people would ask me, well, how do you spend your time? What do you do? For the first year, I almost exclusively spent my time with old people, because I realized very quickly that I could wear myself out, like going and finding young people and dragging them to church and really producing, building up this group. But if I didn't have anywhere to bring them to, then there was going to be no effect from that. And so for me, I was saying, you know, why am I going to work so hard to bring people into this church if the church isn't ready to receive them? So my whole first year as an associate was spending time with thought leaders in the church, spending time with the grandmas and the grandpas, all the old people so I learned who pulled the strings in the church. And you spend time with them, and you talk with them about their own grandkids, that you know that their own grandkids have left the church because, well, I shouldn't. I shouldn't say it this way, but you look at how they relate to church, and you can almost predict and say their grandkids aren't going to be in the church because of the way that they're relating to faith, the way they're relating to our church structure. And so you can go to those who are pulling the strings in the church and just pastor them and pray with them about their kids and just slowly start to redefine the vision of what it looks like to create space where their grandchild would feel safe here.
As Jonathan continued having these conversations with the membership of the church, the young members started returning. And as the church saw this, they decided to start communicating with more than just words. They started asking these young adults to be involved in the leadership of the church, eventually reaching a point where 1/3 of the elders were under the age of 34. This shift away from asking people to be part of the program to allowing them to be part of leading the church made all the difference. When we come back from the break, Jonathan makes the jump from the local church to the local conference and begins applying these lessons of communication on a larger scale. Welcome back to Disruptive Adventism. As we heard before the break, Jonathan found that good communication was the key to seeing great transformation happen in the local church he served at. After 8 years in that church, it was time to take that learning and apply it to a whole new area of ministry.
2 years ago, my conference president called me to his office, and I appreciate that man a lot. And he called me in and he said, "I have a question for you." I said, "What's that?" He goes, "Would you come work at the conference office?" As far as I was concerned, that was a really bad idea. I'm that pastor that always was sitting in the back row of pastors' meeting talking about how those administrators don't know anything about what we go through. Those guys are so out of touch. You know, I was the guy that would be the one that would be come as late to the meeting as I could get away with and leave as early as possible because there's real ministry to be done. So I was like, "Well, Dan, why do you want a guy like me working in the office for you?" And he said he wanted me to work on communication strategy, multimedia communication, and see if we could create an opportunity to build the bridge back between our conference structure, our conference administration, and our local churches. Every church I've been in my life, there's us, the local church, and there's them, the conference people we never see unless there's something wrong.
There is a life cycle to any organization. In the early stages, when organizational structures first become necessary, it's because the organization has grown to a point where without them, it can't continue to effectively fulfill its mission. So it begins to build out administrative structures whose purpose are to facilitate the mission. Eventually, however, as the work of the organization grows and the mission expands, the administrative structures must expand as well. And if the organization isn't careful, it will come to a point where the structures stop serving the mission and the mission begins to serve the structures. For the Adventist Church, our initial organizational efforts in the 1860s through early 1900s were focused on pushing mission forward around the world. There was a need for some practical matters like holding properties and paying employees, but more than anything, there was a need to provide for the communication of our message around the world. And so the church began to build structures to support the mission at the local level. As times have changed and the administrative structures have necessarily become more complex, it may be time to take a long look at our organization and make sure that we don't fall victim of letting the mission begin to serve the structure.
You know, I believe in the Adventist Church. The Adventist Church is an incredible mission organization, or at least it has the potential to be. And I'm so thankful that we have this worldwide denomination, this worldwide opportunity to go anywhere in the world. And when you find an Adventist, you go, "Yeah, we have that in common. We, in our different corners, we have this affinity for each other and for the message that God has given us. And so there would be so much power if our churches saw each other as colleagues, if our conferences were seen as a resource for the churches. I asked Dan, what do you see as the future of conference ministry? He said, the conference only exists as it is helpful in serving the local churches. We have to do better at that. And so he said, I want you to come and work in our communication team and help us tell that story and help us build that bridge back. So on one hand, we're building bridges back between the conference and the local churches, making sure that everything that comes out of our office, every ministry that we put together, everything that we do is clearly a resource for the local church. It's not one of those things like, okay, so I'm creating this event and I'm asking you to come so it justifies my existence. I think that sometimes as conference people, we kind of roll into that. But what would happen if we were so in tune with local needs that it's like this marriage thing or this children's ministries thing or this risk management? What if we could frame it, package it, and deliver it in a way that a pastor would go, wow, that's going to make my job easier. I can't wait to plug into that. And so I've had that opportunity to help build that. And that's just one corner of what I get to do now.
Developing good communication channels with the pastors is just one part of the equation at the local level. The members also need and want to hear from their conference. So how can we develop those communication channels to be more effective?
Organizational communication is such a tricky thing because, you know, let's take my territory, for instance, our territory in Oregon. You have people that are very digitally connected. You have other people that have never touched a computer in their life. You have people that get their stuff through video. You have stuff that would rather read the magazine. And so, that's a challenge for any of us in the church. What we're trying to pursue, and we haven't been doing it long enough to see really how it turns out, but we're trying to make sure that each of those channels, We're trying to make sure that each of those channels crosses over in a way that they complement each other, but you know what you're going to get from our Facebook feed, or you know what you're going to get from our weekly newsletter. You know what you're going to find when you go to the union paper and our pages in there. And yet there are enough connections between them that we hope you'll plug in.
When we come back from the break, we'll shift our focus to the local church. How can we refocus our communication at the local level to make sure we are proclaiming the gospel so that the world around us can hear it? We're back for our final segment in today's episode, and as we wrap up our conversation with Jonathan Russell, we're going to begin to shift our focus to the local church. We hear a lot about transparency and authenticity these days. There's a strong feeling of cynicism in our modern society that's the result of attempts by leaders in the world around us and in the church to craft a message that may not always be accurate. As trust has been eroded in leadership across the board in our society, the church must commit to complete transparency in its communication and interactions at every level.
If the system is working in a way that doesn't necessarily represent me, why should I still buy in? Why should I still participate in that system, the system that embarrasses me? And so, so right now we are pursuing strategies for building that rapport and continuing to connect with our people. But even then, I say strategies, which is another part taken wrongly, that's another part of the problem. You know, should I say this? I will. I don't know if it'll make it in, but one of the things that concerned me about annual council was when there was this idea of take the message back to your constituency about mission. It was almost as if there wasn't an awareness that The world is watching already. We don't, it's no longer our job as communicators to curate the message for our people. It's becoming our job to go alongside our people and journey honestly with them and to pursue this, an authenticity that recognizes that faith can be messy. I mean, if I'm going to bring a message back from annual council, I've already lost faith with my people because I'm programmed and strategized. If I can't come up with a way to be honest and authentic, I fear we'll lose connection with our people.
The work of the church, which really is just the work of the gospel, is based on a relationship. And every relationship needs trust and open communication. It's imperative that our actions line up with the message we are communicating. And that goes beyond the simple transfer of information to the place where the gospel actually changes lives.
It's helpful for people to know what's going on. That's an obvious structural one. Like, if the board makes a decision, share it. Let people know what your leaders are doing. I think the more complicated one is to be aware of the cultural barriers to transparency. Our churches are very good at penalizing people for being transparent. Okay? We teach them that from the first moment they walk in church. Okay, you walk in the front door, and it doesn't matter what has been happening that morning. It doesn't matter if you've been fighting with your kids or on, like, your wife and yourself aren't getting along. You pull into the parking lot, you park, you look at each other, you give each other one last glare, then you get out of the car, put your smile on, and walk arm in arm into church. And the door opens, and everybody's like, "Happy Sabbath, Happy Sabbath." We've communicated that you have to be a certain way to be there. And if you've ever seen in most churches, when somebody comes in any other way, you're like, "Well, what's wrong with them?" And so, like, right from the start, I'm taught I can't be transparent. I can't be honest. And so part of it is a cultural journey to say, you know, when I see someone that doesn't look like me, or maybe it starts with a leadership team. Maybe the elders say, when we see someone that doesn't look like we think they should, instead of taking a step back, we're going to lean in. Say, "Hey, what's going on?" You know, we have to create space where I'm not penalized for being honest. And I mean, if we had a lot more time, we probably could get into some more specifics of how to do that. And maybe it's different in every place, but we can't penalize people for being honest. We have to take away those cultural barriers to be able to create this opportunity for authenticity. In many churches, your elders and your leaders have a lot of influence, and rightly they should. I mean, they've been called to lead in that congregation. And so these types of changes start with a small group. As a pastor, if I model what I expect, if I model leaning in and creating space for authenticity, then people recognize that that's what we're going to value as a community. If I take time in my elders' meetings and coach elders and maybe even role play, sometimes we don't know how to talk to each other at all. And so in the small leadership groups, taking intentional conversation about creating space for authenticity, when as leaders we model it, our members follow.
It's a common conversation in churches everywhere that the church is supposed to be a place where imperfect people come to find hope and healing. But it's also far too common of an occurrence that when someone does come and tries to drop the facade to let their struggles and hurts out, that the church isn't prepared to help them through that. It's time to take a look in the mirror and find out if the words we are speaking to this broken and hurting world really mean what we think they mean.
Jesus is really clear that if we have Him, we have freedom in Him. He who has the Son has life, life abundantly. And if we're not honest about the rhythm of the life that we live in this broken world, then anything that we just kind of curate and shove at people is just a Band-Aid. If we don't acknowledge the journey, if we don't process through the journey and process through the questions, we end up with a faith that's thin. A faith in Jesus that runs deep is a faith that's not afraid of the questions, that is not afraid of the tensions that are inherent in trying to live faith in a broken world. And if I'm going to curate a message that says, just pray more and everything's going to be okay, it comes off to the people that receive that message as somebody who doesn't understand. And if you haven't taken the time to understand my journey, do you even care? And so for me, that's why our whole conference, our whole communication strategy, if there is one, is to shift from curating a downstream message toward creating space for humans to be humans and to provide thoughtful insight and thoughtful teaching that connects the scriptures, that connects the God that we love to what is honestly a messy life in a broken world. And if we can create space for humans to be human, we have a chance to find healing together.
You've been listening to Disruptive Adventism. We hope that today's topic helped you to think and change something about your practices, about your faith, about your Adventism. If you want to subscribe, make sure to go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be there. And make sure to give us a review if you like what you're listening to. If you want to support, make sure to go to patreon.com/disruptiveadventism. It helps us pay our bills and produce the content that you're listening to. And if you want to socialize, make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, or on Twitter, and hit us up whenever you need anything. We'll be there to support you. Thank you for listening today. We hope you join us next time. And as always, we invite you to be disruptive.